भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This morning we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 44, Texts 31 through 38. Significant that in these verses today, the description is of the actual killing of Kamsa. It's quite amazing that in our daily study of Srimad Bhagavatam, verse by verse, we've now gone through 44 chapters of the 10th canto. And the killing of Kamsa being sort of a one climax point in this work, given that the appearance of Krishna is described in the beginning chapters of the 10th canto. So it's significant that we hear and discuss these verses today. And at least for myself, I take this opportunity to pray to Srimad Bhagavatam that the Kamsa-like mentality that is within my heart can be purified by hearing this description of Krishna's killing of Kamsa, so that the heart may be purified and we may develop pure love for Krishna. This is what the Bhagavatam has to offer to us. And at this climax point in these verses today, I think if we all make this prayer to Bhagavatam, we will certainly receive the mercy of the Bhagavat. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and his disciples who have presented this wonderful work to us. So the word meanings for text 31, what we'll do is we'll chant responsively the Sanskrit for text number 31, then I'll read the translations and the purports through text number 38. I would request, though, that at the end of the purport in text 38 that you leave the screen on, because we want to go back to some of those verses just at least initially. Okay, so word meanings. Hateshu, being killed. Mala Vareshu, the best wrestlers. Vidruteshu, having run away. Cha and Bhojarat, the Bhoja king, Kamsa. Nyavara, words, cha, and idam, these, uvachaha, spoke. Hateshu malavareshu, vidruteshu chabo jarat, nyavarayat swakturyani, Vakyam Chedam Uvachaha Ateshu Malavareshu Vidruteshu Chabojarat Nyavaraya Swaturyani Vakyam Chedam Uvachaha Ateshu mala vareshu Vedruteshu chabojarat Nyavarai swaturyani Vakyam Chedam Uvachah.
Vakyam Chedam Uvachah.
Ladies. Translation by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Text number 31. The Bhoji king, seeing that his best wrestlers had all been killed or had fled, stopped the musical performance originally meant for his pleasure and spoke the following words. Kamsa said, "Drive the two wicked sons of Vasudeva out of the city. Confiscate the coward's property and arrest that fool Nanda. Kill the most evil fool, Vasudeva, and also kill my father, Ugrasena, along with his followers, who have all sided with our enemies." Kamsa thus raved so audaciously. As Kamsa raged, thus raved so audaciously, the infallible Lord Krishna, intensely angry, quickly and easily jumped up onto the high royal dais. Seeing Krishna approaching like death personified, the quick-witted Kamsa instantly rose from his seat and took up his sword and shield. Sword in hand, Kamsa moved quickly from side to side like a hawk in the sky. But Lord Krishna, whose fearsome strength is irresistible, powerfully seized the demon, just as the son of Taksha might capture a snake. Grabbing Kamsa by the hair and knocking off his crown, the lotus-navel lord threw him off the elevated dais onto the wrestling mat. Then, the independent lord, the support of the entire universe, threw himself upon the king. Purporting, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada describes the death of Kamsa as follows. Krishna at once straddled his chest and began to strike him over and over again. Simply from the strokes of his fist, Kamsa lost his vital force. In text number 38, as a lion drags a dead elephant, the Lord dragged Kamsa's dead body along the ground in full view of everyone present. O king, all the people in the arena tumultuously cried out, "Oh, oh!" Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that many people in the audience thought Kamsa had simply been knocked unconscious when thrown from the lofty dais. Therefore, Lord Krishna dragged his corpse so everyone could realize that the evil king was indeed dead. Thus the exclamation, "Ha, ha," indicates how surprised the people were that the king was suddenly dead and gone. The audience's astonishment is also mentioned in the Vishnu Purana, Toto haha pratam sarvam asitad ranga mandalam avyaginaya hatam drishtva krishnena matureshvaram. Then the entire arena became filled with cries of astonishment as the people saw that the master of Mathura had been contemptuously killed by Krishna. Om Agyanatim Arandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksunamilitam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. So I asked Keshava to keep the verses up here because Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives an alternative reading to a couple of these verses, and I thought that they should be up there when we read this alternative meaning. Text number 32. You can put text number 32 up there. It reads here in Bhagavatam in front of me. Text number 32. Kamsa said, "Drive the two wicked sons of Vasudeva out of the city, confiscate the coward's property, and arrest that fool Nanda." Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, according to the inspiration of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, Kamsa's statement, "Drive the two wicked sons of Vasudeva out of Mathura," can also mean, give these boys of unattainable qualities the best position in the city. Protect Krishna, the treasure of the cowherd men, who is the most intelligent. Nanda Maharaj has tied up who that most intelligent Nanda Maharaj has tied up with ropes of love for Krishna and established an affectionate relationship with him. That's the alternative reading to this. There's also an alternative reading to text number 33, which reads here in the Bhagavatam before me, "Kill that most evil fool, Vasudeva, and also kill my father, Ugrasena, along with his followers, who have all sided with our enemies." So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, this verse can also mean something else. Kamsa said, everyone should take shelter of Vasudeva, who has unfathomable intelligence. In comparison to him, there is no one more saintly. You should also take shelter of Ugrasena, who has taken shelter of the Supreme Lord. So in that way, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur shows how Kamsa's words can be read as a glorification of Krishna. So with that in mind, we'll go over the verses here today and this description of Kamsa's finally being killed. Starting with the question that Hari Parayana Prabhu asked yesterday in the class. He asked about why the wrestlers were not afraid of Krishna, whereas Kamsa was afraid of Krishna. So with your permission, Madan Mohan, I can answer. Try to say something in answer to that question. Because it's an interesting question, and I think that it's illustrated by these verses that we are reading today. Therefore, I thought that we'd go back to it. Actually, it's described in the Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the entire arena of Kamsa, says here in a description of the mixed rasas toward the end of Nectar Devotion, the entire arena was filled with dread on the part of Kamsa and his priests. So the entire arena was filled with dread. Now, dread is something more than fear. Let's say it's an elevation of fear. And so Kamsa and his priests, who were on the dais, obviously they were experiencing this type of dread. And you acknowledge that in your question. But the question is, and what about the wrestlers? They also knew that Krishna wasn't an ordinary boy. They said like that. They spoke to him. You're not an ordinary boy, and things like that. But the wrestlers, if we read the description that's given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that they appear to be not as afraid of as Kamsa, because they're measuring Krishna's strength, Krishna's ability, that which they would be afraid of, based on their own strength. We see them, don't they? What do they do? What's the description of what the wrestlers do there physically? What do they do? Yeah, they're like, you know, like, hey, you know, I've got physical strength here. You know, they're measuring their own strength. We do that even today. I mean, there's a billboard I see when I drive to Jacksonville. It's a lawyer's billboard, so I'm sort of attracted to see what they're. But they have some lawyer on there, and he's talking about how he's going to give you an aggressive defense. And what's he doing? He's like pulling up his sleeves. Okay, you know, take your shirt off. It's time to get to it. You know, my arms are going to flap you. So that's what the wrestlers are doing. They're slapping their arms, and they're taking shelter of their own bodily strength. And they're thinking that, yes, you may have killed that elephant that has so powerful and everything like that, but you haven't met me yet. I can use my strength to I can show my prowess. They're taking shelter of that. So there may be some feelings, some adrenaline running through their veins. You know, when people in sports competition, they get adrenaline flowing in their veins. It's a little bit of a fear before the contest actually starts. But real athletes feed off of that. So the wrestlers may be feeling like this. We have our own strength. And therefore, they're not as afraid as Kamsa. But what is Kamsa's experience? What is the basis of this dread that Kamsa is experiencing? To understand this, we have to go way back to the beginning of Krishna's appearance in this world, actually before he appeared. When Kamsa went to the prison cell of Vasudeva and Devaki to kill those children, he took them one at a time with all his strength, lifted the poor little defenseless infant, smashed him against the wall and killed him. And that way he felt very powerful and very good about himself. But what happened when he went to the eighth child there? He went to kill the eighth child. Same thing. I've done this seven times before. It was the eighth child, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay, anyway, the eighth child. So he went there. I've done this before. He grabbed the child. But then the child slipped out of his hands, out of his grasp. The strong grasp of Kamsa. He's such a powerful person, the strong grasp. But the child slipped out of his hands and went up into the sky and told him, Kamsa, you're a fool. The child that's going to kill you is already born elsewhere. Now, maybe you've seen the painting of that. And if you look at the expression on Kamsa's face, if you can't recall it, go back today and look it up in the Bhagavatam, the painting. Kamsa looks shocked. He's astonished that first the child slipped out of his hands, and then that she spoke to him in such a harsh way, telling him he was a fool. He looks astonished. This was the beginning of putting fear. Kamsa knew from that point that he wasn't all-powerful. He knew that, oh, something is beyond my control, my physical control. He was different in that way from the wrestlers who were slapping their arms. And Kamsa lived in fear from that moment that he would be killed by Krishna. And that fear grew and grew and grew to this dread that's described in the Nectar of Devotion here. You recall that just previous to this, the arena happening, Kamsa was having all kinds of visions and omens, both dreaming and awake. Dreaming, seeing his reflection in a mirror with no head, seeing no footprints in the sand. He could understand there's something supernatural, something beyond his physical strength that was at play here. And then when he saw Krishna defeat these wrestlers in the arena, fear, dread gripped his heart. It gripped his heart. So his experience was much more developed than that of the wrestlers who first actually saw Krishna when he maybe killed Kulavalya Pita. Yes, they didn't fear as much. Kamsa knew more. He was more enlightened. He had more experience. He understood that there's something beyond him that's ultimately going to be his end. And so in that way, we can understand that they weren't as afraid as he was. In text 32, Kamsa begins speaking. Now, actually when, as I mentioned, this is all coming to a climax after 44 chapters. Finally, Kamsa is going to be killed. He comes face to face with Krishna. And quite frankly, what happened, what transpires, is kind of pathetic when you think about Kamsa. It's really pathetic what happens. Because Kamsa becomes and reveals himself as such a coward. Many persons have met the personality of Godhead and those who are inimical to him and met him in much more heroic ways than did Kamsa. Think of Hiranyakasipu, when Lord Nrisimhadev came out of the pillar. He wondered, well, what is this? I've never seen this before. But he attacked. He showed his strength. Whereas Kamsa did just the opposite. He acted like a coward. One thing that happens when fear grips your heart, and I don't know if any of you have really ever experienced when fear grips your heart. I mentioned in class here several years ago now an experience I had when fear gripped my heart. It was in a street fight. Somehow or another, I ended up in a street fight, and I saw a guy on the other side take a baseball bat and clobber somebody on the head. At that point, fear gripped my heart, and I got out of there as fast as I could. You know, you start running. And essentially, your heart rate starts pounding, and the characteristics, not only running or moving very fast, but you also talk very fast. You talk very fast. And so this is what we see happening to Kamsa here. As soon as he saw Krishna kill those wrestlers and the wrestlers fled, they were feeling that fear in their heart, so they started running. As soon as Kamsa saw that, the fear grabbed his heart, and he began speaking very quickly. If you look at text number 32 and 33, imagine how Kamsa was speaking them. Drive those two wicked sons of Vasudeva out of the city. Confiscate the coward's property. Arrest that fool Nanda. Kill the most evil Vasudeva. And I will kill my father along with all his followers who all sided with our enemies. He was quite excited and speaking very fast. We can imagine he was speaking fast due to the fear that was in his heart. Now, I'm trying to not just give my opinion here, but there are many times we see in Krishna's pastimes when he came face to face with an enemy, and that enemy was speaking in this kind of fast way, saying all kinds of nonsensical things. And I'm going to read to you the meeting of Salva and Krishna, because at that meeting, Krishna describes this type of what Kamsa is going through. He He basically describes what Kamsa's going through. So Salva had struck Krishna in the course of their fight, and then Salva thought he had become victorious. And with a roaring sound, he addressed Lord Krishna as follows. "You rascal Krishna, you kidnapped Rukmini forcibly even in our presence. You baffled my friend Sisupal and married Rukmini yourself. And in a great assembly of King Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yajna, while my friend Sisupal was a little absent-minded, you took an opportunity to kill him. Everyone thinks you are a great fighter and that no one can conquer you, so now you have to prove your strength. I think if you stand before me any longer with my sharp arrows, I shall send you to the place wherefrom you will never return." So he's speaking like this, very quickly throwing insults one after another at Krishna because he's excited in the heat of battle. But then Krishna explains here. He says that, "Foolish Salva, you're talking nonsensically. You don't know that the moment of death is already on your head. Actual heroes do not talk much." He makes this point. "Actual heroes do not talk much. They prove their prowess by practical exhibition of chivalrous activities." So talking, anyone can talk and say any nonsensical thing in the face of danger. But those who are truly heroes don't talk, but they show their actions by their own physical abilities, their own prowess. And Kamsa did neither of these. Kamsa talked nonsensically and very rapidly, saying all kinds of crazy things, which were meant to show that he still had control of the situation, which was completely gone at that point in time. He had no control of the situation. Yet he's still speaking this way. So he spoke that way, and he also acted in a very cowardly way. If we just jump to text number 35, we can see that seeing Lord Krishna approaching like death personified, the quick-witted Kamsa instantly rose from his seat and took up his sword and shield. Sword in hand, Kamsa moved quickly from side to side like a hawk in the sky. This description to me does not describe a kshatriya entering battle. For one thing, a kshatriya entering battle follows the rules of combat, and the first rule of combat is, if your opponent is unarmed, then you don't get arms to fight him. But that's the first thing Kamsa did. He grabbed his sword and shield when Krishna was face to face with him. That's against the Kshatriya code. It's actually the sign of a coward. He could fight Krishna with his bare hands. He killed those babies with his bare hands. Why couldn't he fight Krishna, who was just a boy, with his bare hands? But no, he grabbed his sword and his shield. And you kind of get the impression from this description of him moving quickly from side to side like a hawk in the sky. That's also sort of contrary to what you'd expect from a powerful kshatriya. What does a powerful kshatriya do? Stand and fight. Anybody that knows anything about martial arts knows that you have to have a firm basis. And from that basis, your strength comes. If you're moving this way and that way quickly, the Sanskrit here is interesting. It says, vicharantam, moving about, asu, quickly. So he was moving quickly this way and that way, based on the fear that gripped his heart, moving, rather than a kshatriya who is confident of his ability, win or lose, who stands firm and fights. And so actually Kamsa was acting like a coward. He was acting like a coward, speaking nonsensical things instead of showing his prowess, which is not a kshatriya. He took weapons to fight an unarmed opponent, which is against kshatriya codes. And he was moving around showing his fear that he had no stanum, or place of from which he fought with strength. And so Kamsa doesn't come off here. Rather, it's rather pathetic to see him in this kind of situation. Now, Krishna, on the other hand, was displaying a lot of prowess, even to the point where it was astonishing to the audience. Apparently, in the arena, the king's dais was quite high up, and thus he could overlook the arena. And Kamsa was there with his priests and chief ministers on this high platform. But when Kamsa started speaking like this, Krishna became angry. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this also. He says that Krishna became extremely angry upon hearing this enmity addressed to his devotees, Kamsa's speech. Krishna, unlike most living beings, does not lose his power of discrimination when he is intensely angry. Krishna jumped so quickly onto the king's platform that no one saw him do it. So Krishna was angry at the words that were directed against his devotees. And so, not that he lost control, like anger makes us lose control, but he was inspired somewhat to do his business by those words to protect his devotees. And he jumped very quickly up on his high dais, so quickly that most people didn't even see him do it. Such a display of prowess. I mean, it was obviously a high thing, and not just that you climb up it or something like that, but it's an accomplishment to get up there, a stunning accomplishment. And Krishna did it in such an astonishing way that he just jumped up there. It was surprising. No one could have expected such a display of prowess. It reminds me of how when Lord Ramachandra entered the arena where the bow was, the bow of Shiva, and there were so many powerful Kshatriya kings had come there, even Kamsa, even Ravana himself had gone there, and all of them had approached the bow, and they couldn't even budge it one way or another. But when Krishna, when Ramchandra went up to the bow, he picked it up immediately, to the shock of everyone. I mean, all these powerful kings are going up there, and they're trying to lift the bow, and they can't do it. But when Ram went up there immediately, he picked it up, and everyone was shocked. Oh, wow. A similar kind of thing with Krishna here in the arena of Kamsa. This high dais was there. But he immediately jumped up all the way in top and faced Kamsa face to face. And that's when Kamsa started this moving around like a hawk with this cowardly action. And so Krishna, He grabbed Kamsa by the hair, knocked off his crown, and then he threw him off of that platform. He threw him off of there. Again, you can imagine the audience being quite shocked by seeing this. He threw him off, and then Krishna has, I think he enjoys when he's fighting, getting on high platforms and, you know, jumping from them on his enemy, because he did it, right? He did it in Kaliya, right? He went up on the tree there at Kaliya. He tightened his belt. He's dramatic. He likes a dramatic flair, Krishna. He's already got his hair tied back and everything and his clothes tightened when he came into the arena and faced the elephant, so that's already done. But now he jumps up on a high platform, throws his enemy down, and then he gets up there and dives on him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he landed on top of him, you know, so that he wouldn't hurt himself when he jumped down, you know. So Kamsa's body was like the pillow. See, It's a flair. Krishna has a flair for things, and he likes to jump off these high things, like he jumped off the tree on Kaliya. So he jumped off the high dais on Kamsa, and then, as described by Srila Prabhupada, he started punching him over and over and over and over again. And in that way, Kamsa was killed. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. But that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. Because people might not have been sure that Kamsa was dead. And so Krishna dragged him by the hair around the arena, just like a lion drags a dead elephant. It's interesting here in the purport, the devotees that translated and commented on this, they quote a verse from Vishnu Purana. And it said, "Then the entire arena became filled with cries of astonishment as the people saw that the master of Mathura had been contemptuously killed by Krishna." Had been contemptuously killed by Krishna. English can also be understood in different ways, just like Sanskrit can be understood in different ways. And if we take this statement that Kamsa was contemptuously killed by Krishna, we can understand it in at least a couple of different ways. If you go to the dictionary, you'll find a couple different definitions of contemptuous. One definition is that a feeling or showing deep hatred or disapproval. So contemptuously killing someone, you'd be showing a deep hatred or disapproval of that person. So when the Vishnu Purana describes that Krishna had contemptuously killed Krishna, one way to understand it is that Krishna was angry. He had some very ill feelings toward Kamsa, and therefore he killed him in the way that he did. That's one way of understanding it. There's something to that. As I read the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it said that Krishna was angry that he had spoken in such ways about his devotees. And so, and we know that Krishna wants to protect his devotees. But there's some things that don't exactly line up with that kind of understanding. One is that Krishna is not affected by anger in the way that conditioned souls are. And as also described here in the Nectar Devotion, it says that the entire arena was filled with dread on the part of Kamsa and his priests, and restless expressions of pleasure on the cheeks of Krishna's friends. Restless expressions of pleasure on the cheeks of Krishna's friends. So it's not that Krishna's friends there, or what to speak of Krishna himself, were necessarily feeling dread or hatred or something like that. But maybe contemptuously means something else. And so the other definition of contemptuously means disrespectful. And so Krishna contemptuously killing Kamsa could be understood as from the viewpoint of the people of Mathura, because it says here in the Sanskrit, Krishnena Mathureshwaram, the master of Mathura. So the master of Mathura, the residents of Mathura, their master, Mathureshwaram, was killed by Krishna, and it was very disrespectful for Krishna, a young boy, to kill their king. So it could be understood in that way too, that the killing of Kamsa was disrespectful to the fact that he's Mathureshwar, he's the king. How can you just go in there and kill him? You know, it's not a very respectful thing to do. So a slightly different kind of understanding was there. But one way or another, there are certainly some feelings involved. Krishna has feelings, and those feelings are most prominent in caring for and protecting his devotees. So, angered by the words of Kamsa, the last words of Kamsa against his devotees, and not caring for the respectful position of Matareshwara and taking his life anyway because he was offensive to his devotees. So, in this way, Kamsa met his end, and we'll leave it there. Any comments or questions? Steve P. Mooney, Prabhu?
This is a real small thing, but I got part of the class coming in too. But I mean, all feelings aside, I mean, Kamsa had just ordered a purge, you know, not just to kill Krishna and Balaram, but Ugrasena and his whole dynasty, you know, everybody in his party and Nanda and, you know, his party. He just ordered a purge. And if, you know, Krishna didn't go up in there and just take the guy's head off right then and there, you know, there's going to be some practical consequences pretty quick. I mean, even if you waited 15 minutes, there's going to be some people running out of that stadium and starting to execute on that program. So, I mean, there was some practical dynamics there as well.
Yeah, therefore he jumped up there real quickly. Yeah. And
he wasn't playing around with this guy.
Yeah, it didn't take a lot of time. Yes, look over here, behind you, Prabhu.
Question. In Goloka, Krishna is not beating his devotees to death, but when he comes here, he does. Why?
Why? Because here's where he can have a good fight. He likes to have a good fight, and so he can't fight there. There's no cause, no reason. There's no ecstasy in fighting there with his devotees, so he comes here. And he sends his devotees ahead. Actually, These are actually devotees that he's fighting with through his own devotees. They're taking the role of these demons to give him pleasure, this fighting pleasure. So that takes place here. Krishna is complete in that it takes place here, not there.
So he's living in Goloka along with his devotees, and gets all his associates together, and he says, let's go down the material world, and I'm going to beat the living hell out of you. It's a pastime, right?
Essentially. Mukunda, there, behind you, Prabhu.
A comment and a question. This contemptuously part, when I read that he pulls his hair, he grabs his hair and throws him off, you know, that's real contempt, complete lack of disrespect. If you're fighting and you just, the guy can't do anything, you're holding him by his hair and humiliating him, basically.
Yeah.
This question I've always had about this pastime. What happens to the sword and the shield? It's like it didn't exist. He picks it up, then Krishna approaches him, but what does he do with it? Knock them off? Or?
Well, the sword and shield, you can kind of imagine the sword and shield, because as I mentioned, he's acting very cowardly, so it's almost like he's hiding behind it, just like, you know, waving it, you know, in a kind of fanatic way to protect himself. So that's, he knocked his crown off, and so he's pushing him around, knocking him around, probably knocked those off also, you know, and again, it wasn't like a kshatriya who takes his sword and shield and stands and fights and is determined and has a good control of those things. It's more like, you know, just hiding behind those kind of things. That's the impression I get in reading this. And so in that sense, it's not easy, it's not hard to understand how they're just pushed aside, because he wasn't really using them like a kshatriya would anyway, so that they're firmly in his grip and control. They just flimsily held on to them. Yeah.
Pushkarpa was just mentioning that you had mentioned earlier how high that dais was that he jumped up on. But there's so many amazingly interesting things in this lila. One was that when he heard the first Akashvani, when he was taking Devaki, that time Kamsa's fear started, because ordinarily if somebody was to tell him, oh, you're going to be killed by somebody, he would dismiss it. because even all the demons he had, like Keshi, Agasur, he had defeated all of them. That's how they came into his service. But because he heard it from the sky, he thought this is destiny. So he became afraid. Then secondly, when he changed his mind with the very first child, he wasn't going to kill him. Narada Muni came there and told him the whole history of Kalanemi. So then now here's confirmed. Sadhu's telling me, Akashvani's telling me. So now the fear got deeper. Then finally, when he took the seventh child and began to throw it down, it flew up in the air. It wasn't just an ordinary person, but that was his worshipful deity. He used to worship Durga Devi. So now his worshipful deity, whom he worships, is telling him, the child's already been born and you're going to die. So now the fear gets thicker. So then he told Putin, he said, now go kill all the boys. And Durga Devi told him also, eight Shaktis have also been born. Kidnap all the girls. So because Kamsa was so angry, he arranged that from the Vindhya child, he kidnapped Radhika and Chandravali and those Sakis. So now, this is Krishna's first time having to leave Vrindavan. Gopal Champa's explained, Narada Muni comes, tells him you're going to have to go to Mathura because now Vasudeva and Devaki, they're suffering everything. So the whole trauma of Krishna leaving Vrindavan, getting on the chariot, what happens to all Vrijabasis, Krishna's angry at this point. So when he gets to Mathura and the washerman comes up with his nonsense, he immediately kills him because that was the same guy who messed his life up in Ramlila, the dope washerman. Then he gets to Kuvalyapita and kills Kuvalyapita. The wrestlers think, oh, Kuvalyapita was strong, but he doesn't have any skill in wrestling. He's not a trained wrestler. He's just strong. So we can take him on. But Kamsa seeing this and thinking, this is the personification of everything everybody's been telling me getting ready to happen. Also, Krishna had not yet matured like a Kshatriya. So when he went to kill Kamsa, all the demons he killed in Braj, he was just playing. And they just happened to die while he was playing with them. Now, this is the first time he's actually going to kill somebody. He's not trained Kshatriya like this. So in anger from having to leave Braj and everything, he just jumps up on the dais, grabs him and kills him. The people in the arena thought they were coming just to see a wrestling match, because Kamsa never revealed to the Mathura Vasis, we're going to plan to kill these two sons of Vasudev. So it was like not a known thing. So all of a sudden, everything goes really sour, and everybody's really angry. They're killing people. So the people in the arena are shocked. What's going on here? So now not only Krishna kills him, but he violates all kinds of social etiquette, because addressing him as Mathureshwaram means he's our king. But now you knock this crown off, grab his head, and drug him in the dirt by his hair. It's a very great insult. So now Krishna is so angry, he tries to explain the main thrust of his anger was because Kamsa was the person who was the main reason he had to leave Vrindavan.
Okay, actually it's one other point here that is mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is that when he was killing Kamsa, when Krishna was killing Kamsa, he thought, let me see if I can find it here. He thought that, okay, when he was killing, grabbing Kamsa by the hair and knocking his crown off, Krishna wanted to kill Kamsa. At that moment, he thought of himself as the shelter of the universe, which was burdened by Kamsa. So he also sort of, in his own mind, justified, you know, what he's doing. You know, I'm the shelter of the whole universe, and then just burdened by Kamsa. That's what I've come here for. So he's aware. He has all levels of awareness going on, not just that he's like madly doing something, but he's aware. I'm the shelter of the universe. Kamsa is a burden. I've come to relieve that burden. So he's just thinking. Any other things? Yes, Trevor.
I was thinking that Kamsa seems to be a really super demoniac demon compared to like Dandavakra. You know, when it's stated that the Lord usually come and have fight with the biggest demons. So in the past I used to always think that Kamsa fall within this category of the six big demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbh, you know. But somehow he seems not to fall within that category.
Yeah. Well, he certainly didn't display much prowess at the time of death, whereas some of the others did. You know, they fought more valiantly. Just kind of, anything else? Yes, Mother Mahatma.
I just wanted to say that it was a wonderful narration, but also what I got out of it was that demon or not demon, as long as you know about Krishna and principles, you get the reaction faster and immediately. Because, you know, Kamsa knew more and was more aware than other demons, so that's what I got from it.
So know Krishna in truth, that is our mission. Okay, we'll end there. Gantarachri Madhbhagavatam.